Krishnan. I'm a consultant with Microsoft based here in the Netherlands. I don't speak Dutch, so this talk is going to be in English. Well, welcome to your second day of Dev Days, or the first day for some of you. Who was here yesterday? Everybody. Almost everybody. Some of you might have seen me speak earlier, and I think this is one of the talks which could go either way. I was talking to a few colleagues about this because parallelism and asynchrony tend to be quite difficult topics. But I think you might enjoy this talk, at least I hope you do. If you have any questions you don't understand, just stop me and ask me to explain. Could be in the middle of my presentation. Well, a few years ago when I came out here to make, I think I gave a talk on the internals of Link. I made a little mistake there because I came into the hall about half an hour before the session was going to start, and I was all set up, and I'd drunk quite a lot of coffee, so I thought it might be wise to go to the men's room. So I went to the men's room, which happened to be quite some distance away. I think it was somewhere in Amsterdam, but the session was here in The Hague. And, a long story short, when I came back, it was a pretty narrow corridor to get into the hall. And I couldn't get in because there were lots of people waiting outside. So I was pushing my way, trying to get in. And people wouldn't let me pass. They said, go and stand back at the back of the line. I said, well, then we have a little problem. And there was this guy, I think he was 3 meters tall. I could just see him, you know. You want to mess with me? And I thought, nah. I said, we have a little problem because I'm the speaker. Yeah. If I can't get inside, you can't get inside. And he said, a deadlock. But that's the extent of my parallelism jokes. All right, what are we going to see today? You're going to see a fair bit of code. The PowerPoints are there mostly as backup. How many of you have played around or heard about the new asynchrony features that are coming out in the next version of .NET? How many of you understand it? Okay. Hopefully at the end of this talk, you will be able to understand what asynchrony is all about. In fact, people tend to confuse asynchrony and parallelism, and rightly or wrongly, they both are related, but they're not the same. And this talk, I think, will help you also distinguish between what asynchrony and what parallelism is. Just a very, very brief recap of things that are there in .NET 4.0 and Visual Studio 2010. What you see in purple is what we have today on the managed side. What you see in blue is the unmanaged code. And starting with Visual Studio 2010, Visual Studio 2010 and .NET 4.0, parallel link was introduced. So if you look at the query, at the end of the first line, you see an as parallel operator. This is simplifying things, but what this does is it takes your links to objects implementation and switches to a parallel implementation where it runs in memory, and what it does is it then spins up as many threads as it can in order to process your query as efficiently as possible. This is already there today in Visual Studio 2010. And of course, the whole of the parallel link infrastructure is built on top of the task parallel library. Just a quick show of hands, how many of you have played with the task parallel library? Okay. Since not many of you have played around with the task parallel library, don't worry. This session will also give you a very quick recap of what the task parallel library does. Essentially, parallel link is built on top of this infrastructure. What you see out there is a parallel loop, which parallelizes the loop body across multiple cores. And a whole lot of the work that's going into the tooling and also the language features, which is going to appear in the next version of .NET, is based off the work that's already there today in F#. I assume there are no F-sharp people out here. Okay. F-sharp, by the way, already has a lot of asynchrony and parallelism features built into the language itself. And in Visual Studio 2010, there's a whole lot of tooling in order to help you debug and visualize your multi-threaded core. So you've got a visualizer to visualize your threads and your cores and your CPU utilization and things like that. You've got a debugger, which can help you debug multiple threads. And you've also got a parallel stacks feature, which lets you visualize the stacks of multiple threads. All of this said, this talk is not going to be about tooling. You can play around with that elsewhere. You can read about it elsewhere. This talk is about parallelism and asynchrony. But in order to talk about parallelism and asynchrony, I need to give you a brief overview of what the task parallel library is about. And with that, let's jump into Visual Studio. Now, what I have out here is just, by the way, is this font readable for people at the back? Yeah, okay, good. Okay, what I have here is a simple WPF application with a button out there. And if you're wondering what this application looks like, I'm not a real graphical designer, but it looks, it looks something like that. Not very nice. I'm not a graphics designer. This talk is not about graphics design anyways. But the point out here I want to try to make is to at least give you a very quick overview of the task parallel library. For those of you who are used to working with the .NET thread pool, everybody out here has worked with, I assume, creating threads in one way or the other. So I believe this particular piece of code should be understandable for most of you. What you do is you say thread.queue user work item, and you give it a delegate. And within the body of the delegate, you give it some code. Yeah, I could call a function. I could write pieces of code. All of you are familiar with this. And what this piece of code does is it queues that particular item for a thread to be picked up from the .NET thread pool. And of course, you have the thread pool. But if you look at what the thread pool gives you back from the queue user work item, maybe this is not that readable for a lot of people, but essentially what the thread pool gives you back is just a Boolean, which is not terribly useful. What do you do with a Boolean? And what the Boolean tells you is, has the work been queued successfully or not? It doesn't tell you anything about the status of the work or whether an exception occurred or whatever the case might be. And if you look at the IntelliSense, there's a class out there called task, and as you can see from the IntelliSense, what it says is represents an asynchronous operation. Now, this is new in .NET 4.0, and it all lives in the system.threading.tasks namespace. And what the task does is something very similar to the thread pool. In fact, the default implementation of tasks runs on top of the thread pool. So what I can do for running some code in a background thread is I can say task.factory.startNew, and I can then give it a delegate, which looks like this. So I can say run some code. Now you might be wondering, now what's the difference between the first piece of code and the second piece of code? Now the difference here is that the start new actually gives you back a handle to the task. And if I then have a handle to the task, I can do a lot of interesting things, like I can wait for the task to finish, I can say, wait for the task to finish. I can get the results, if there are any. I can see if there are any exceptions. And the whole task infrastructure is not something that I'm going to go in depth into, but essentially the bottom line is this gives you definitely more flexibility than just using the thread pool. Now, interestingly, from tasks, you can also return values. So let's say I return a value. And what I'm then going to do out here is I'm going to use the compiler's ability to infer the types. And if you look at the IntelliSense for this, it says this is a task which returns a T result, and the T result is a system.int32. So this is exactly the same as saying I have a task out here which returns an int. Yep. So I could then run this piece of code. And then, of course, I can wait for the task to complete. And then I can get the results of the operation, like so. So I could say, and if I run this little piece of code, well, I get the result. Well, you might be wondering, well, all right, I've got the task infrastructure set up. Now, the interesting thing about tasks is I can start off multiple of these. So let's just call that T2, T3, that's T1. And then I can do all sorts of interesting things, like I can say task, wait all. I can wait for a number of tasks to complete. Yeah, so I can give it an array and say, well, when you're, say, T1, T2, T3. And that would then, you know, wait for each of those tasks to complete. And then when all of them are complete, control would then flow to the next line of code. So this is a blocking operation. Now, interestingly, I can also wait for any one of the tasks to complete. Yeah? And then I can do anything that I want with the results from each of the tasks. Now, tasks also support exceptions, but I'm not going to go into that in a great amount of detail out here. Now, you might be wondering if I've got a task out here, and if I'm setting the result out here, am I actually doing anything useful? What I do is I start off a task asynchronously, or to be more accurate, a task as a background thread. And then what I do is I get the result in the subsequent lines of code. Now, let me just get rid of some of this out here. Now, to illustrate, what I'm going to do is I'm going to let this be a bit of a long-running operation. So I'm going to let it sleep for 3 seconds. And if I then run this piece of code, if I say get answer, well, what you see out here is my UI was hanging for 3 seconds. I couldn't do anything. You might be thinking, what good are tasks then? Because this code could have just been synchronous code. Because what I do is I start off a task in a background thread, and then a few nanoseconds or microseconds later, in the calling thread, I wait. Yeah? So I just wait out there, waiting for the result. So this is not terribly useful. But thankfully, people did think about it when they designed it. So here comes one of the more difficult parts of things to grok, because first let me just write a little piece of code, and then I'll explain
what it does.
Okay. What I have out here is a continue with, and what that continue with does is it essentially takes your method and splits it up in two. So everything that appears before the continue with runs synchronously. And in this case, what I do is I create a task and then I return immediately. So control flows to the next line of code. And what happens within the continue with, interestingly, is that continue with does not block. What it does is it says I split up my method in two. The part of the method that's above this imaginary split executes, and control returns to the caller. Once control returns to the caller, the asynchronous operation continues. In this case, it happens to be a background task which runs on the thread pool, and that operation is going to continue. And when that operation finishes, it's going to notify the caller that, hey, I'm done. And then the subsequent part of the method, the bottom half of the imaginary split, then runs. So in this particular case, there would be no blocking. Now let's just see what happens. Say, get an answer. My UI is still responsive, but it doesn't work. And if you look at the exception, it says you're now on a different thread, which is true because the continue with executes on a different thread. But I'm not blocked. And what I'm trying to do within another thread is set the value of a text box, which, of course, being a user interface component, won't let me access it on another thread. So you might be thinking, oh, yeah, well, I know the answer. Enter dispatcher.invoke, and then I can give it a delegate. And hopefully, if I now run this, you can see that my UI is still responsive, and the result comes back. Yeah? I might be thinking, well, that's quite a lot of complicated code to write with all of these lambda expressions and things. So, yes, we can make it simple, and we have made it a little bit simpler. What you can do is, as an option for the continue with, you could say, when the task completes, the rest of the method has to be executed in the same synchronization context that you executed the first half of the method, which happens to be the calling thread. I still don't block, which you can see. As you can see, my UI is still responsive, and the result comes back on the same thread. Yeah? Now, tasks actually go a whole lot further, but hopefully this gives you an idea of how you can schedule pieces of work in background threads, but you don't have to deal with callbacks and things like that coming back to you on different threads. That's always been a bit of an issue. And the one takeaway point from here is a feature which language designers, if you read the documentation for the tasks, and if you read a number of blogs or things on the internet, one of the things that you're going to run into is a term called continuations. How many of you have heard of the term continuations? Well, this is essentially a continuation where what you're doing is you're splitting up your method, where a part of the method executes asynchronously, and when that asynchronous piece of code finishes execution, it continues with the subsequent piece of code. So the subsequent piece of code is called the continuation. Yep, simple enough thing. So what we did out here was we split it up. An important concept because the rest of this talk is also based off continuations. I'm not going to use the word continuations because it tends to be hard enough as it is. But the fact is, methods are split up by the compiler. Any questions so far? Okay. Now, talking about language features, every release of .NET has had a theme. So you can see the themes on the right. There's always been one big theme. And if you look at the trends that are occurring today, these trends have to do with the themes that each of the versions of .NET are based on. What we see today are that applications are becoming increasingly connected. And everything tends to be a service. Yeah, you have some server-side code, it has to go to the database, it has to go to another service. You have client-side code, it has to go to the server side, it maybe has to go somewhere else. But everything as a service introduces an incredible amount of latency within your application. Now, in a typical application that we as mere mortal developers deal with, if you take a look at the time spent executing C# code, it's not much. Like, for example, if you were writing server-side code, you were writing a WCF service, or you were writing an RSMX service or something else, what do you do within the service? You probably go to the database. You get some data. You put it into some kind of objects, and then return that data structure back to clients. But if you look at the time that's actually spent in C# code itself, it tends to be pretty small, because what it's doing is it's going to the database, getting back some data, and putting it in objects. But the actual time in C# code is, well, almost negligible compared to the total time. And the same also goes for client-side code. What does your client do? Well, the first thing it does is it calls a service, and then it waits. Can't do anything. And then the service responds, and then the client does something, present the data. And when it's doing all of this, the actual time spent executing code compared to the time waiting, well. And this leads to a whole lot of responsiveness problems. If you're wondering what the toilet bowl of death is, with Vista and Windows 7, you've got this wait cursor, which is a circle, which kind of looks like a toilet bowl. And usually when users encounter this, they have two reactions. Either it sucks or it stinks. So that's why it's called the toilet bowl of death. And, well, with the trends being also to move a whole lot of applications to the cloud and to the server side or some kind of host, it becomes increasingly difficult for applications to stay connected and still be responsive. Now, we're not just talking about user interface applications, but also server-side applications. And to alleviate some of these problems, how many of you are Silverlight developers as well? A fair bit. Okay. I think it's about a third of the audience. And with Silverlight has asynchronous-only APIs. So, for example, if you wanted to call a service, the only way to do it is to do it asynchronously. And JavaScript also happens to be an asynchronous-only API. But the bottom line is asynchronous-only APIs were introduced because of all of these problems. And unsurprisingly, given the trends today, the next version of .NET, which the rest of this talk will be based on, whether it's called .NET 4.5, C#5.0, the numbering is a little bit unclear. That's usually a marketing story. But the next version of .NET, the theme is asynchronous programming. Now, asynchronous programming is quite different from parallelism. But before we go into parallelism, let's just talk very briefly about some of the asynchronous patterns that exist today in .NET. You've got synchronous code, which is not asynchronous at all, but just as a baseline. You've got a method foo, which gives you back something of type T result. And you call foo, and you wait till it gives you back T result or throws an exception. And then you've got the asynchronous programming model, which was introduced with the first version of .NET. And it's a set of callbacks. So you have a begin, blah, 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 and an end, blah, blah, blah. I assume people have used this pattern sometime in the past or currently. So what you do is you call a begin foo with a set of parameters, and the last parameter tends to be an asynchronous callback, and then you get back an I async result. And then what you then do is you call end foo and give it the I async result, and then you get the result back. And then with .NET 2.0, there was the event-based asynchronous pattern, which was event-based callbacks. So if you had a method foo, the asynchronous version of that would be called foo async, which took, well, just the usual arguments. But what you had was also a foo completed event, which you could sign up to. So you could subscribe to this event and then call foo async. And then it would execute asynchronously. And then your event would be called when the operation completed. I assume people have used this. Show of hands? Yes? Oh, okay, good. So given all of these asynchronous patterns, it's also hard for a developer to figure out which one to use. Sometimes a lot of the .NET APIs actually provide both versions of this. You've got a begin-end pattern. You've also got the event-based pattern, and then developers think, well, which one should I use? But the benefits of asynchrony, now, this is a little bit tricky to explain, because asynchrony doesn't mean multi-threading. Yeah, just let that sink in for a minute. Asynchrony doesn't have anything to do with parallelism. Now, parallelism, on the other hand, may or may not have something to do with asynchrony, but all that asynchrony is about is letting the current thread not block. And the intention is, on the client side, you can reuse that thread. If it happens to be a UI thread, you can use it for doing something useful, and on the server side, you can reuse it for servicing other requests, which is quite important for scalability. Now, to just illustrate what synchrony is versus asynchrony, assume that you've got a method download data. What this does is it goes somewhere, maybe across a network, maybe it goes to disk, and it gets that piece of data, and then you process the data. If you take it from the perspective of a thread, what you normally do is you call download data, so there's a little blip that says, okay, you've called this method, and then the method blocks. And then there's a blip at the end where it says, oh, I have the results, so I'm going to process it now. But if you take a look at it from the perspective of the calling thread, the thread is blocked for the period of time that download data executes. You can't do anything. Now, in this particular case, download data happens to be an IO-bound operation. If you're wondering, if I've got a lot of code within download data, where does that execute? Well, it has to execute on a thread. But if it was an IO operation, as in you're going across the network or you're performing a disk operation, then that tends to be an asynchronous method, which you can execute in another fashion, where you call download data async. There's a little blip, again, because, of course, you have to start invocation of the method. But because it executes asynchronously, the calling thread is freed up. It doesn't block. So it can continue to do something else. It can at least show a responsive user interface. And then you can have process data, which comes as a callback. Now, you might think, well, that's really not rocket science, but when you're doing multiple of these, blocking tends to be a big issue. If you do this in a loop, your calling thread is blocked. You might be thinking, well, I'm a developer. I've kicked out a background thread. my background thread does this blocking operation. So my calling thread is asynchronous. Yes, your calling thread is asynchronous, but this background thread that you've started up to call this blocking operation is still blocked. So there is a thread somewhere. There are two of them now, one of which happens to be not blocked, which might be your user interface thread. But the thread that's actually doing the work is just waiting. So you've got two threads now, which is just a waste of resources because one of them is sitting around doing nothing. And so it's usually a whole lot more efficient for IO-bound operations to not use threads. And actually, .NET does provide this. It's just that a lot of developers don't know about it. How many of you have heard of IO completion threads? Okay. I would say just a handful. Maybe I can count them on the fingers of one hand. But IO completion threads, this talk is not going to be about IO completion threads. But what it essentially does is, if you're doing IO-bound operations, like going across the network or doing a disk IO or reading from a stream, whatever the case might be, for these IO-bound operations, what you can tell .NET is, don't block the current thread. I want to invoke it in such a manner that let the operating system handle the work, and once the work is done by the operating system, it notifies your application that, hey, I've done this piece of work, which means that your calling thread does not have to block. Clear so far? So no threads. So to illustrate a lot of these issues, let's take a look at what the hell is a problem today. With that, I'm just going to switch to another piece of code out here, which is a little sample that we ship with the async CTP, which is a CTP of the next version of the features in .NET. This is a little application that uses an API to go to Netflix, which happens to be a provider of content. And it searches for movies. And what it does is it calls a service through HTTP, and the service then gives back a result. In this particular case, I can search for movies based on a release year. So I can enter a year, and then I can click search. And what this application is doing is it's going across a network and pulling a lot of movies and then displaying the album art for those movies. If you notice, this application is just built in a synchronous way, just normal code that you would write, and it's found 311 titles, which it then displays. Yeah? And to show you what this code actually does, okay. A lot of this is not absolutely relevant. This is actually the URL for the service. But the important part is all here. So once I click on the search button, what happens here is I call a load movies. And what it does is it runs in a loop. And this particular API doesn't let me get all of the results at once. So it does a bit of paging. So I can ask for 10 or 20 results, and then I keep asking for more and more till there's nothing left. So I run in a loop, and I query this API, and every time I get back results, I check whether I do have enough results or not, and if I don't, I break out of the while loop. And then I display the movies. So I do it in batches. So I take 10, get those, display them, get the next 10, display them. And if you actually look at this particular application, it's completely unresponsive. I'm not just moving my mouse, I'm actually clicking it, trying to move the window. It's just not working. And, something came back. Oh, there was a whole lot of things that I clicked on out here. That was all of my clicks finally getting processed by the message pump. So I was clicking around, doing a lot of things, and every time I click on this, I open up the movie. So, but it all responded, but after everything came back. So for this particular piece of code, it's synchronous. What I do is, in order to show you what exactly this piece of code does, it creates a web client and then calls download string, which gives me back a piece of XML, which I then do a link to XML query over. And then I get back the data, and then I display it in an image. Simple enough code. Now, in order to build this as a responsive user interface, you might be thinking, well, why don't you just do it in a background thread? You know, threads are not free. You know, we talk about parallelism. Okay, parallelism does involve threads. But here, we're talking about asynchrony. And in this particular case, this piece of code is actually I/O bound because it's going across the network, it's making calls, it's getting back data, and then it's putting it back in the user interface. So in order to try writing an asynchronous version of this, where do you think I would have to start? Don't worry. I'm not going to bite if you give the wrong answer. Where do you think I would have to start in order to make this asynchronous? Sorry? The click event. Well, I could start there to try to make it asynchronous, but in this case, think about I/O bound operations. Which part of this code is I/O bound? Download string. Download string goes across a network, it executes synchronously, and it blocks till I get a response from the server. So that's the place where I would start. Let me actually make this a little bit bigger. Yeah, better. So if download string is the place where I have to start, let's see what kind of methods are available on the web client. There is a method called download string async. So as a developer, you think, I can use a download string async, which I can use the same parameters, so all of that is fine. But if you follow the red squigglies, async methods don't return anything. If you look at this, the IntelliSense says void. So this is where you start to think, shit, I'm screwed. So, okay, so you think, okay, this doesn't return anything, so, well, let's see what I can do. Now, this is based on the eventing asynchronous pattern, so what I have to do is I have to subscribe to the download string completed event. So I would say, there is a download string completed, and, well, I could write a piece of code that says, all right, let's see if I can... You know, when you're in front of an audience, your fingers magically tend to be 10 times the size. So what I have out here is I have a lambda expression, which... Let's see if I got this... Okay. So what I have out here is a piece of code which I tried to massage. And then it says, oh, okay, you need the data still if you follow the red squigglies. So I say var data is I can actually get that piece from the result. If you're wondering what this piece of code does, all it does is it subscribes to the event. The event gives you back the results when it completes in the event args. I get the result. And then the rest of the code can execute. But if you follow the red squigglies again, I can't return anything out of this method. Can I? So you think, okay, screwed again. So you think, okay, I'll make this a void method. And what I then have to do, okay, there's no thing I give up, I have to use a callback. So I say, all right. I'll use a callback, which in this case should be of the same type as that. And instead of returning something, what I'm going to do is I'm going to say invoke the callback with the results I have. Yeah? So I kind of fixed this piece of code. And because it's asynchronous, let's just rename this guide to follow the pattern that .NET has as well. So no red squigglies here. IntelliSense seems to be happy. But where I call this method, I have a whole lot of red squigglies, a pretty big one. It says, well, this method signature is invalid anymore. So you think, this should be simple enough to solve. And it might be simple enough to solve because all you have to do is provide a callback. How hard can it be? But if you squint a little bit harder, you would notice that I'm inside a while loop. And you start to think, how do I do this? Can it be done? There's some kind of recursion involved. Can it be done? Well, it actually turns out that it is possible. The only thing is it happens to be a fair bit of code. Well, let me actually try figuring out what that piece of code could potentially look like. Of course, it would be an array of movies. That would be my action. But I can't do anything there yet because it can't start to execute already. So you think, this action probably looks something like, I give it a set of movies. And let me try massaging this like so. And then you think, this is really not working out because I have a while loop out here. So what this probably should look like is if movies.length is greater than 0, then I would kind of have to, I probably have to query my movies asynchronously, or do I have to display them first? What do you think has to happen? I have to display them. So let's take this piece of code and move it out here, because I might have the movies already. And then let's see. This might turn out to be a bit more complicated than I thought. So you think, I have to call myself recursively. So I pass myself. And you think, am I actually doing the right thing out here? Because, you've got this display movies, you've got the status, you've got the query movies. Let me just remove this red squiggly out here. And then I probably am doing something wrong out here because this probably should be before the next call to the query movies. Now, this maybe looks something like what it should be. I don't know. I've just written a whole lot of code. I've defined a kind of recursive lambda which calls itself. So I declare an action out here. And then within that, I pass myself again. So if you look at this, you're kind of turning yourself inside out and then turning yourself inside out again and turning yourself inside out again. And by this time, your head is starting to explode. So you think, I think I might have gotten things right. The compiler doesn't seem to complain. And of course, this is just the definition of the lambda. I need to kick off everything. So I say, all right. A start offset, a page size, and my action. Now, if you're looking at all of this code and you think, I don't understand anything what you've done, it's okay. I don't either. Now let's try executing this and see what it does. I enter a year. It might blow up. It might not. Let's see if my UI is responsive. Well, it doesn't seem to be that responsive. Now, let me actually just... go back to Visual Studio. And let's actually see... okay. Whether I was actually doing something which I wasn't supposed to do. Usually the task manager is a good enough indication to tell you, are you doing something wrong? But the problem with this piece of code, let me actually try fixing it out here, because I knew that this would go wrong. Let's actually get a piece of code which actually does work, potentially in an asynchronous manner. And let's see if this UI is responsive. Ah, it seems to be responsive. I'm getting something back. But if you take a look at this piece of code, it's actually a piece of code that neither you or I understand. Do you understand this? How many of you understood kind of what I was doing? Gee, you're all good programmers. Now, how many of you would be able to understand this if you didn't write it yourselves? If you had to read code that you got like this? It becomes a little bit more difficult. And as a developer, I don't know if it's a man thing, but once you start having callbacks, your control flow breaks up. And nothing that you're used to actually works anymore. If you were wondering, why didn't my code before work, and why did this piece of code work? Any guesses? Well, it didn't work because... of this little piece. What I did in my demo earlier, when I was writing out all of that piece of code, was I signed up to the event handler after I called the download string async. Now, if you look at the control flow, if you look at the flow of control out here, I start off something, and I subscribe to an event, which has the code that has to execute after something completes, but I haven't called that something yet. That's in the next line of code. So if you look at the control flow, it breaks up. You've got callbacks, you've got recursive lambdas, and suddenly code that should have been simple doesn't turn out to be that simple anymore. So you think there's fundamentally something wrong with having to program this way. And this is the problem space that we are trying to address. Well, the question was, isn't there a problem with regard to unsubscribing from the event? There could be a problem. The only issue out here is the web client is actually disposed of after everything executes. And even though there is a lambda which is subscribed to that event, that's also within the body of a method which also would go away once that scope is left. So while you normally would have to unsubscribe in this case because everything goes out of scope, I don't need to unsubscribe, if that answers your question. And because there's something fundamentally wrong with writing code this way, let's actually go back to the code that I originally had and see how I can improve this. Okay, this was my original synchronous version of the code. Yeah? My original starting point, where I call the download string in a synchronous fashion. Now, the new language features that we are introducing is actually built on top of the task infrastructure. And what I didn't show you, and maybe which is a little bit handy at the moment, actually, to show you, Let me go back to my original application. What I had here was a task that was invoked and ran in the background. And what the task did was it invoked a method. Now, this piece of code that you see out here is pretty common enough. But there's also another way of doing this. Instead of having the caller start up a task, I could let methods return a task, which represents an asynchronous version of itself. Now, this method out here, getAnswer, I could create an asynchronous version of that, which instead of returning an int, could return a task of int. That is an asynchronous version of itself, which says, I'm executing, I don't know how long I'm going to take, but at some point in the future, I'll give you an int, and that int you can capture by calling task.result. Now, if you're wondering, how do I call this piece of code? What you could do is, you could say, I return a task.factory, start new, and then I give it a lambda. And of course, I can get rid of all of this, because in order to call my function now asynchronously, all I can say is, give me back a task which will return an int. It's almost the same version of what you saw, but just a little bit cleaner. Now the return types have changed, because now what I have is an asynchronous version of a method which is represented by a task. So all I've done is, the return type was an int, I've only captured that in a task, and the task represents the body of this method. Yeah? And if there was an exception that occurred, I could throw the exception, I could set things within the task. Maybe a topic for a little bit later. But hopefully this piece of code is understandable. Now, if you understood this piece of code, you probably see where I'm going with the... Let me set this to be my startup project. So, if I have my query movies, and I wanted to make an asynchronous version of this, what I would then have to do is, with the same trick that I applied, instead of returning an array of movies, I would return a task of movie arrays. And now you see the red squigglies starting to appear. It says, well, I'm returning a movie array. Well, let's actually say that you're returning a movie array out here, but the compiler knows nothing about the task type, because it says you're returning an array of movies. I don't know how to actually convert this into a task. And you might be thinking, oh, you're probably going to do a whole lot of tricks. But there is a compiler trick which we are introducing. If you put in the keyword async, that little red squiggly disappears, but now I have a green squiggly. Green squigglies are much better than red squigglies. Now, what does this green squiggly say? Now, this green squiggly says, well, it's a long piece of code out there, or a long piece of text, but what the green squiggly essentially is telling you is, you have declared something to be asynchronous, but there seems to be nothing asynchronous about it. Which is true, because I'm calling download string synchronously. Right? So there needs to be some magic that happens here as well. And if you notice, there is a method called download string task async. So instead of calling an async method which returns void. There is a method out here called downloadStringAsync, which returns a task. So if I do that, what this returns, if you look at the IntelliSense, what this returns is a task of string. Because the download string gives you back a string. You're representing that using a task. So using the same trick, you've got a task of string. That's the return type. And now the compiler is going to complain, saying, I have no idea how to capture this. Because you have a task of string, but you're trying to do something with the results. So you might be thinking, oh, all you have to do out here is you have to say, well, in this particular case, data.result. Is this what you're thinking? No. We can go one better, because data.result would block till the results came back. Yeah? This is what I showed you earlier. When you call the result, it's the same as saying, I wait in the thread, so I block the thread till it comes back. So there's another compiler feature, a new language feature that we're introducing, called await. And now the green squigglies are gone, at least in this particular method body. Now what has happened out here? Now if you remember the part where I talked about continuations, where you have to have this imaginary line that splits up your method, that's actually what's happened out here. Everything up to the await is your imaginary line, and everything below the await is the rest of it. So what the compiler does is it rewrites your code to use tasks, where the first part of your method, until an await is hit, at that point, your method returns. And the rest of the method is signed up to continue when the first piece finishes. Question? That method is introduced in the CTP. In fact, I'll come into this a little bit later. Or maybe it's good to mention it now that the question is here. I mentioned in the beginning that .NET provides two forms of calling code asynchronously. One is using the event-based callbacks or the asynchronous programming model. So you can use the begin invoke, end invoke, or you can use events to sign up for events and then you call a method async. What we're introducing now is hopefully the third one and the last one, which is a task-based asynchronous pattern. And the task-based asynchronous pattern returns tasks for all of the methods that are asynchronous. So wherever in the .NET framework you find a begin blah blah, end blah blah, or invoke async, you're now going to find task-based versions of them. That's going to be there in the next version of the .NET framework. So the next version of the .NET framework will have task-based versions, and that's where this method is coming from. Yeah? So at least the squigglies have disappeared, and as I mentioned, if you imagine the imaginary line just below the await, what happens is that piece of code executes asynchronously. That is, this piece of code executes asynchronously, and when it finishes execution, the rest of the method is signed up as the continuation. So imagine this appearing within a Lambda function. But I have some more red squigglies out here at the place where I call this. It says, well, I can't seem to resolve all of this. So how do I solve this? What you do is, I'm trying to call an asynchronous method. Am I actually doing the right thing out here? Let me just see. Oh, yeah. I'm calling the query movies out here. But of course, this method happens to be synchronous. So what I would do is I would just move this whole asynchrony up the call stack. So I would say declare this calling method to also be a load. And then this method. Yeah. So what I'm doing is I'm moving the asynchrony up the call stack. So it also composes quite nicely. I mean, asynchronous methods can call other asynchronous methods. So once I've done this, the compiler doesn't seem to complain. And if I execute this piece of code, it's starting to run. Is my UI still frozen up? I think I'm doing something wrong because this is the second time it's frozen up, which was the whole point of the demo, because it shouldn't be frozen up. Let's see if I'm doing something wrong. Sorry? I can't hear you. Await before load movies. Well, I don't think that should be really necessary, but let's actually just hope it was a blip. Ah, okay. It was a temporary blip in my system. So as you can see, the UI is still responsive, and I'm getting back results. So this composability is actually the problem space that we're addressing with the next version of .NET. And if you actually look at the code out here, it's not that much different from the synchronous version. Question? Yeah, I am. Everything that you saw? Well, I'm not getting, if your question was, just to get the question so everybody can listen to it, your question was, are you still getting 10 movies at a time? Oh, good question. Am I getting 10 movies in parallel? The answer is no, I'm not. This is an asynchronous version. What you're talking about is parallelism. What you're trying to do is, if I understand your question correctly, what you're saying is I start off a set of threads, and I have all of them call download movies and get 10 chunks each, which I then join back in some way. No. What I'm doing out here is I'm calling an asynchronous method that gets 10 movies. I'm displaying them once I have the results. And then I'm calling the next batch asynchronously and then displaying them. And if you look at it from the calling thread's perspective, the only work that it's actually doing is displaying the movies once it comes back. There are no other threads. In fact, this whole thing actually runs on the UI thread. The asynchrony doesn't use any threads. That's an important feature that you have to understand. Asynchrony doesn't need threads, because asynchrony, by definition, usually means IO-bound operations. If you're talking about code that needs to be executed, yes, then you need a thread. Yeah? Yes and no. The question was, what about the task? Doesn't the task run on a thread? Actually, tasks have very little to do with the thread pool. By default, when you kick off a task using the code that I showed you earlier, where I said threadpool.queue user work item, or where I say task.startNew, if I start off a task new using the task.factory.startNew, because the body of the method that appears within a task.factory.startNew is .NET code, right? It has to execute somewhere. And what the task does is, by default, it uses the thread pool in order to execute that piece of code. So you're right. Yes, it does use threads. But the difference is that a task doesn't necessarily have to be tied to a thread, because all that a task is a level of abstraction over an asynchronous operation. If that asynchronous operation uses a background thread, because it needs to in order to run code, it will use a thread. But that same task abstraction can also be used to abstract over asynchronous operations which do not need to use threads. So there's no reason to use a thread. In fact, you could use tasks. Maybe I should very quickly show you this as a demo, which maybe might make some things a little bit clearer. If you're looking at this piece of code, you're absolutely right that this piece of code actually does use up a thread. Now, if I had another method out here where I don't want to use threads, of course, this is a purely theoretical exercise because code, by definition, does need threads. I/O operations do not need threads. But what I could do is I could say I declare a task completion source. Now, this is another type, but what this lets you do is it lets you taskify, if that is even a word, it lets you taskify operations that may or may not have a thread representation. So what I could do is I could return a task from this method. And then assuming that there was some piece of code out here which made an I/O operation, and I got back that result at some point in the future, I could then set the result of that out here. And the caller who was waiting for that result would get notified. Kind of understandable? Let's say that I performed an operation over the network. That was an asynchronous operation, so I didn't need to block a thread. And then I could just set the result once I get back the results, and then whoever is interested in this task would then get notified that they have a result. Well, within the implementation of those methods, it depends on how those methods are implemented. The question was, would you actually see those notification events coming in? These task-based methods, they're not something totally new. In most cases, they're actually wrappers around existing pieces of asynchronous code. Maybe in order to explain that, I think I need to switch to this particular piece of code. Now, this download string async task, I think your question was, how is this implemented? How this is implemented is actually using the old event-based callbacks. So internally, within, if you disassemble the implementation of this, what you would see is you would see a task completion, create a new task completion source, call the download string async, which I showed you earlier, sign up for the callback, and return the task representing that. And once that operation completes, I would say task completion source dot set result. So in fact, you could create your own wrappers around asynchronous operations and expose them in a synchronous way. Yeah. The question was, what happens to the state? Or I think a more accurate question would be, what happens to the context that you were in? You were in a particular calling context, and something has executed asynchronously, and you need to come back to that same context to execute the rest of the method. How do you do that? Actually, the answer is in one of the slides that comes a little bit later. So the bottom line is, we're introducing a new task-based asynchronous pattern. So the goal is, you might read a lot about async and await, and what a lot of people say is, well, async usually means that the method executes asynchronously. But actually what it means is the method contains code which may or may not execute asynchronously. Yeah? There's a small difference there. It's not that you execute the whole method asynchronously, but there are parts within the method which may execute asynchronously. And I'll talk about that may. Why is there a may execute asynchronously? There is actually some conditions when we optimize things and actually run things synchronously if we think we already have the results. I'll come to that in one of the slides later on. So the intention of tasks is actually to represent ongoing operations, whether it's on the thread pool or whether it's an I/O bound operation or whatever. The abstraction is a thread, is a task. I think I need to run through a couple of slides which I didn't have time for, but your question on what happens to the context is actually answered here. What the compiler does is when it sees a method which contains an async and an await within it, creates a state machine. So this is actually what the compiler is doing. It says, well, I see that you've got an async method and an await method, and I'm going to rewrite this piece of code into a state machine which captures the context and can come back to that context when the method finishes asynchronous execution. And if you look at it, the first part of the method actually captures the state. And there is some optimization done in the middle part, which is what I talked about. Now let's assume that you schedule a method for asynchronous execution. It's starting its asynchronous execution, and then you hit an await. Now, assume that at the await, you already have the results. For some reason, it executed incredibly fast, or there was an exception, or whatever. You couldn't, or it finished execution. If you already have the results, there is some optimization here in order to not run asynchronously, but to just continue execution synchronously without using callbacks. So it's as though the method executed synchronously at runtime. But that's an optimization. So if we have the results, what we do is we execute it asynchronously without using any of the callback infrastructure. So there are no lambdas or things like that which have to execute. So the whole goal is actually to unify asynchrony. So if you've got CPU-based operations which need a thread, and they usually do, you can use tasks to abstract over that. But if you've got network or I/O bound operations, you can also abstract them using tasks and not use any threads. And that's all about composing all of these. So assume an asynchronous scenario where you have to perform these operations. Now, I was talking to my son, and I ran through this asynchrony part. He's a pretty smart guy. So I said, well, you've got this asynchronous scenario out here. How would you do this? He looked at it. He thought for a couple of minutes, and then he said, five threads. I said, five threads? What are you talking about? I said, you have something where you say, I'm going to get the links from YouTube, and then I'm going to download two movies, so that's three, and then I'm going to create a mashup from the downloaded videos, so maybe a background thread there, and then I want to save it, yet another background thread, so the answer is five. I said, haven't you been listening to a word I've been saying about asynchrony? You don't need threads for asynchrony. And I was starting to get a little bit angry at him, so... it is frustrating. And then he said, Dad, I'm only five. I thought, you're only 5 years old, so there's not much you can do. But actually, you can execute this just using zero threads, except for one part. which is CPU bound. If you actually look at this piece of code with a number of await points, all of the network bound and the IO bound operations use zero threads. They just execute. And then the rest of the methods are signed up as continuations. So there are little blips. There are 5 blips when the method is scheduled. But the calling thread, the thread that executes this, does not block at all. And the only place where you might actually use a thread is in the CPU-bound operations, which you see out there, mashup videos async. That's probably some .NET code, which has to get the 2 video streams and join them together. Now, that's .NET code. It has to execute somewhere. You might do that in a background thread. But the rest of the operations don't require any thread. And the beauty is they don't cause the calling thread to block either. Yeah? I think I'm coming to the end of my talk. Now, the goal is actually to introduce this everywhere. So this is going to be there in the next version of C# and VisualBasic.net. It's actually already there in F# today. And it's going to be introduced everywhere. The base class libraries, WCF. So if you're using WCF where you create a proxy, now the proxy that's going to be generated for you in order to call a WCF service is also going to have a task-based results. So if you have a getData method which returns an int, for example, when you have that method available in your client-side proxy, you would then have a getData async which returns a task of int. Yeah? And the goal, of course, here is not to use any threads, or rather to also not block the calling threads. It's going to be used with an ADO.NET. If you have SQL connections and you have an execute reader, then you also have an execute reader async. Actually, I had some demos further on, but I don't have that. And interestingly, this is also going to be introduced, or it actually is already introduced, for Silverlight and the Windows Phone. So if you're used to developing in Silverlight, where you only have an asynchronous programming model and you're used to all of these callbacks, you don't need that anymore. You get the same asynchrony benefits just writing synchronous code, or writing code that looks synchronous but executes asynchronous. Which brings me to the end of my talk. I think because we are a little bit over time, we need to move out for the next speaker. But I would suggest that you just come and find me and ping me for questions. Yep.